You're now listening to Wisdom from North podcast with me, Jannike Øynes. Here I will explore topics such as metaphysics, spirituality, personal growth, and in general, how we can create good lives for ourselves. My intention is to find some answers, but perhaps more importantly, finding new questions to ask, because there is always something new to discover in this wonderful universe that we live in. In Wisdom from North, we're passionate about helping you take your spiritual growth to that next level. That's why we are collaborating with some amazing spiritual teachers and partners who offer free webinars and classes. Go to wisdomfromnorth.com/free. Disclaimer: the views and opinions expressed in this podcast belong to the guests and do not necessarily represent the views or positions of Wisdom from North or any entities they may represent. Now, please enjoy the episode.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, Ray. A warm welcome to the show.
Jannike, thank you so much for having me. It's an honor and a privilege to be with you today.
Thank you. And I'm excited to get to know your story today, because I know that you are an acclaimed author of the book, The Atheist and the Afterlife, which sparked my interest right there. You had an NDE. You are a metaphysical teacher, a coach, a theorist, and you're doing wonderful work for humanity. And it's interesting that your journey started out as an atheist, and it seemed like you had great resistance towards spirituality, but you just couldn't close that door. So I would love to hear about your NDE before we actually go other ways to speak about energy and frequency and how we can really empower ourselves and all the wisdom and knowledge that you now have and have integrated. Did it all start? Like, did your spiritual journey really start and your awakening with this NDE?
Well, it was certainly the biggest catalyst. However, if we go back before that, even to my childhood, it was a tumultuous childhood. It wasn't a very happy family type of situation. So I would isolate myself to kind of stay away from the trauma, drama, arguing, fighting, what was going on in the household. When I did that, that isolation, it would be like 6 hours at a time. So from when I got home from school, maybe all the way until late in the evening, I would be hiding in the basement or locking myself in my room, out in the yard, whatever it was. But without cell phones and without anything to entertain us and just me and nothing but me, I was kind of in a meditative state, if you will. I didn't know that I was, because I was 5, 6, 7, 8 years of old age. But I doing this every day, year after year, day after day, I started to actually become aware of things that most people probably just simply don't notice. And that what I'm referring to is, if you strip away everything like that's on a wall, if you're staring at a wall and you take away the paint, the color, the wood, what remains is the energy. And I could start to see that. after a while. I was kind of in tune with energy, and I didn't know what it was. I didn't know how magnificent this was going to be later in life. I just knew it sort of existed. It was there. I started to bond with it. I made up what I thought were imaginary friends, but they very well could have been energy of the deceased that I was interacting with. And I didn't think that this was strange. I thought everybody could do this. I didn't think it was weird, but if I brought it up, everyone else would tell me I'm completely insane. So I kind of kept it to myself and hid it. And the reason I gravitated towards atheism was a rebellious thing. You know, my parents, they were Christian, but regardless of what they were, I would have rebelled against it anyway. So I chose to go to the full extreme and go all the way to the other side, which was atheism. And I just called myself an atheist. And I probably didn't really know what that meant at the time. But later in life, I still chose to identify with that because I couldn't believe that the loving God, the way it was explained to me in Catholicism, would allow these things to transpire, the things that I was seeing, the things that were happening to me, the things that were going on. So it just didn't resonate with me for that reason. And when I had my NDE, I was 20 years old, and I was still living at home with my parents. And my bedroom was on the second floor, and it was directly above the kitchen of that home. In the kitchen was a stove that ran on natural gas, and that type of gas rises. And there was a gas leak one night. And it was all night long. It was leaking. We don't know for how many hours. The gas would rise, and I was inhaling it as the night went on, as I was sleeping. So the next morning, the way I understand the story, my mother turned on the stove, I guess, to make breakfast or whatever it was she was doing. And there was a ball of flames, and the wall caught on fire, and there was smoke, and there was flames, but it wasn't a bad fire. My father was actually able to put it out with a fire extinguisher. Nonetheless, the police were called, the fire department came, and I'm hearing all this commotion downstairs while I'm trying to sleep upstairs. So I need to get up out of bed and find out what's going on in my house. And this is after hours of me inhaling the gas. So it wasn't a fire and it wasn't the smoke, but it was the gas that got to me. So when I try to get out of bed, I find that I can't. I can't move my legs. I can't get my head off the pillow. It's almost like they weigh 2,000 pounds and I can't communicate with my parts of my body. And so I know something's really wrong and I have to get out of this bed. So I use my right arm, which works, and I'm pulling myself to the edge of the bed, and I'm inching my way to the edge. I know I've got to get out. I hear the commotion. I feel terrible. I don't know what's going on. And I just keep pulling and pulling with everything I have until I tumble out of the bed, and I hit face first. What was strange about that was the second I hit the floor, I knew I hit it, but I didn't feel any pain. And the reason this was because I wasn't in my body in that second. It was almost as if before the pain sets in, you're relieved of the pain. And I don't know if everybody's experience is like this, but this is how mine was. So I was above my body, and I was looking down at my lifeless body. Now, my energetic self was in the corner of the room, and directly across, adjacent from me, the other corner, is a bright white light that almost like a tunnel that engulfs my energetic self. It's not shining on my dead self. It's on me, what's left of me. And my energy is commingled with this light. It's like I'm one with the light. I'm a part of the light. And this light is love, compassion, painlessness, euphoria, every great positive adjective you can think of. It was the best feeling I've ever felt in my entire life. And I wanted to go into the light. I wanted to go into the tunnel, and I wanted to see what was on the other side. And so I started to go through. And there was a being at the end of the light who said, "Ray, it's okay. It's safe to come into the light." And I trusted this being, and I don't know who it was, male, female. I still have no idea, but they told me it was safe to come in. And so I started to go in. And as I got further and further in, the euphoria would increase and increase. And so I really, needless to say, I really wanted to go the other side. But here's what happens. My father kicks in the door and he scoops me up off the ground. He's on the ground with me and he's screaming and crying. He's distraught. "My son, my son, my son." And he's calling for the paramedics to come up and help. And he's crying and he's really emotional. So here's what you need to know about my dad is that we never had a good relationship. I've never seen him emotional. He's probably only hugged me like 5 times. And one of them was when I was dead. And the other ones were like for poses, for pictures, you know, it just wasn't there. We didn't tell each other we loved each other. So I didn't know that. I never felt that. And I wanted it really bad. So I asked if I could go back because I wanted to have that so bad. Even as good as this light felt, I still asked if I could go back. And obviously I did. When I came to, I was no longer in that room. I was on the living room floor and the paramedics were on top of me and they were working with their tools and gadgets and stuff and yelling to bring up the truck, which means bring up the ambulance. We have to get him in. And I'm like, "Guys, I feel fine. I feel great. I still have the euphoria like flowing through me. So I'm still like feeling the light." And I'm like, "I've never felt better." And they're like, "Son, you are not fine at all. And you're going to the hospital." And I'm like, but did you see the light? Did you hear the voice? Didn't you see that? I mean, that was amazing. I feel great." And now they start looking at each other like, what's with this guy, right? Is he crazy? Is he on drugs? And again, it's back to I'm crazy. So I shut my mouth just like I did when I was a little kid and I saw the energy, same thing. And I just let them take me away and took me to hospital. And next day I came home. Now, in these times, there's no internet for me to just jump on and say, "What happened to me?" Right? So there's no information for me to get. There's nothing for me to look into, no way for me to look into it. I don't know what to do, but I'm trying to figure out what happened. So I learn a little bit more. And as I do, I'm told what an NDE is eventually, you know, I learn what that is. And I go back to atheism because it's easier. This is something I don't understand. Atheism, I do understand. We live, we die, we're done. It's very simple. And I don't understand what happened or what it could be. So I just deny it. And I chalk it up like this. My analytical mind comes into play and it says, "Well, you probably fell in front of a window." I did fall in front of a window. And the sunlight was coming through the window and that represented the white light that you thought you saw. And you hallucinated because you inhaled so much gas that you were high and you were hallucinating. And there it goes. And I'm done. So I could justify it to myself. I figured it out. Okay. And I'm still an atheist. But it's not so simple. So a little bit after that, maybe a year or two, I move out of that house. I get my first apartment. And I'm thinking, this is my bachelor pad. It's going to be great. We're going to have parties and girls and everything. This is going to be awesome. And that does not happen at all. And the reason is because when I first walked into that apartment for the first time, when it was mine and I turned the key and I went inside, it felt like it was filled with people. It was like, you know, that feeling when you're being watched. It's it's that strange feeling, but it was magnified. And I could see energy everywhere. Like I would see the lines go across the white walls, and I would see the swirlies in the corner of my eyes, and I would feel things hitting me, like pushing. I could feel it. And needless to say, they can mess with anything electrical. So I was a kid who could see energy to begin with. Now I crossed over and came back. I'm like a portal for the deceased to just come on through. So I'm surrounded, but I don't know what's happening. So here I am thinking I'm losing my mind. I couldn't sleep in that apartment. So I started drinking, using drugs. I became dependent because I couldn't sleep otherwise. And this went on for a very long time. I moved out of that place, though. In 10 months, I had a one-year lease and I was out in 10. I moved into a new place thinking it would be different. And when I got into the new place, it was the same thing. The house isn't haunted. Ray's haunted. They're coming wherever I go. Equals, I must be crazy.
It's very interesting to hear that you're having an NDE and you still really don't want to believe that you hold on to that belief system and you have all these experiences. And that is just fascinating to me. But I want to jump into your NDE experience that you met a being that said, you know, it's okay to come here. Yeah. And I assume you probably now seen many other NDE experiencers tell their story. Now, it seemed like then that they were not saying, oh, it's not your time. Because that's something I hear frequently, that some being or God say, it's not your time, you have to return, you can stay, but it's part of your soul's plan to return. But with you, it seemed like it was like, welcome. And it was actually you who made the choice to come back. Have you reflected about that?
Yeah. Oh, my God. And when it first hit me, see, the first thing that happens after the euphoria wears off is you feel pain. Every little pain in your body that like we feel every day, but we don't really notice because our brain kind of blocks it out, that's magnified by 10. And then the second part is I never got that love from my father. My life never changed. It was never better. And so I wanted a do-over. I wanted to go back. I thought about taking my own life. But then again, it's not real. Or is it real? I don't know. So I knew I wanted to go back to that place wherever I was, but I didn't know if that place was real or not real.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I think at the back of my mind, I kind of really thought it was real because I started to live a life where I didn't care if I lived or died.
And when you say that you became this portal where deceased spirits could come through, that also makes sense to me because I've heard after you have an NDE experience, thing accelerates and a lot of people are having these spiritual gifts all of a sudden. Now, could you share or explain how that feels like for someone who has never experienced any ghosts or deceased ones?
All I was seeing was energy, remember? But it was after I met my second wife that I had met her. It was much after my divorce. I had two kids. I got clean and sober. I got a good job. I worked my way up the ladder. Everything's up till this point is just energy, right? But when I meet her, things change. In the very beginning, when we're dating, I see for the first time an energy look like a human. And it's like, it's in here. It's not my eyes. It's not my ears. It's in here. And the same vibrations take place, the lines across the room. I'll start to feel what's happening in the room. And then what happened was, it's like a movie screen, I explain it, that opens up in my mind. And this was the very first time that there was a man who says to me, I effed up. I made a mistake. You can help her. I cannot. Now, before I met her, I never experienced what looked like a human. So I never thought, I never put two and two together. But I realize that I'm really crazy. This is what I'm thinking. Okay. I am really losing it. This is it. This is the end. You know, I finally made it to a good place in my life. I finally found a woman that I fell in love with. I believe she's my soulmate. And if all of this is not enough, she's a doctor of psychology and neuropsychology. So I'm going to have to break up with her by telling her I see dead people. This is going to be terrible. So I figure I'm just going to sit with her. I'm going to tell her this because she has a right to know. I made provisions for my kids. I made sure my will was done. I made sure I had a DNR, a power of attorney, all those things that you need when your life comes to an end. I was prepared because I literally thought I was crazy. And this guy keeps coming to me over and over and showing me the same like 8-second clip, I call it. It was like a video loop that just played over and over. I effed up. I made a mistake. You can help her. I cannot. And so she has a right to know because we just started dating. And I tell her what I see. And what I think she's going to do is give me a recommendation to a doctor, a psychiatrist, say, call him and never call me again. But that's not what she says. She says, take me through that again. And so I do. I said, well, he's a big stocky guy. He's got a beard and a mustache, thick black hair. And he's like, you know, like a tough guy. And he says, you know, I say what he says. And she goes, that sounds like my dad.
Oh, wow.
And I said, but your dad is dead. And she says, I know. And now I'm thinking, she's crazy. It's not, she's nuts. I need to get out of here. Check, please. Let's go. Right. So she's like, relax, relax. I've seen mediums and my dad comes through. And I said, well, what the hell is a medium? Because I don't know. I have no idea. And she proceeds to explain to me. He comes through. He's very powerful. They all say the same thing. And I said, but that's not the way your dad looks, because the photo, the only picture she had in the whole house of her dad, he did not look like the guy I saw. And she said, well, that was a very, very old picture. Let me show you what he looked like before he died. And she goes through her phone and she shows it to me. And I said, you know that guy? And she said, that's my dad, silly. And I was like, wow. So in that moment, I felt relief, but there was a whole new pressure. Like, what is this medium thing? And what do I do with it? And how do I make him stop talking to me? Because it was driving me crazy. So she says, there's a medium that's coming to our neighborhood and she'll be here for 2 weeks. I can book two appointments with her, one for you, one for me. And you can go in there and you can explain what you see and how you see it and just kind of, you know, see what's going on, see if this is real, see what it is. And I said, that sounds like a perfect idea. This is how I know she was my soulmate, right? Because anybody else I would have told that to, they would have ran for the hills, but this was obviously meant to be. So I meet with that medium, and the meeting was amazing, to say the least. I sat with her and she says, what can I do for you, Ray? And I said, well, I'm crazy. And she's like, you know, relax, tell me what's going on. And I said, well, you know, this man comes to me and I tell her the whole story, all the way back to the energy and everything. And when I tell her this story and I say, the movie screen opens and she goes, stop. And I said, what? And she said, that's how I see it too. Not only that, but my parents had me committed for being schizophrenic because I told them I could do this. Now we had this bond. I was like, oh my God, you understand me. And it was so amazing to finally find somebody that I could talk to about this, and a person who didn't tell me I was crazy for the first time. And I'm about 46, 47 years of age when this happens. I'm 55 now. And that's a long time to go and think there's something wrong with you and try to keep it from everybody, right? Hmm. So it was in that moment, and she took me under her wing, and I became her mentee. She became my mentor for a year, and she really saved my life because she taught me how to navigate this. She said, she taught me not only is it real, but here's how you work with it. And here's how you turn it off when you don't want to talk to somebody. And here's how you can turn it on when you do. And she taught me this whole, you know, world that I didn't really understand. And she saved my life without question. One of the things I learned later when I got my second mentor, he taught me things about not just mediumship, about spirituality and so many other things. And he still is my mentor years later. And he told me, he says, well, what happens to a lot of people who have these abilities, but they think they're crazy and they never, you know, find a mentor or somebody to talk to about this that understands, they wind up going crazy for real. Because it can drive you crazy. I mean, imagine seeing the same guy over and over and over. There was a moment he was so persistent. I couldn't drive. I couldn't have a conversation without him interrupting me. You know, it was so bad that at one point I was in a store and I was paying for my stuff at the counter. And I don't know what I did. Maybe I froze or I said something silly. I don't know. But the woman behind the counter says, sir, are you okay? And I said, no, I'm not okay. And I took my credit card back, went to my car, and I just put my head down because I had worked so hard to get here. And I had two kids. You know, yes, the marriage fell apart to my first wife, but these kids, and I gave them everything that I never had. And I listened to them and I talked to them and I cared for them and I raised them, you know, this way. And I have to tell them I'm crazy. And I have to tell the woman I love I'm crazy. So when I find out I'm not, it's just this huge relief. But then there's a new added pressure. What am I required to do with this? Right. And as I go into that experience and I learn from my mentor, I go back to college again for metaphysics this time. Complete my bachelor's, my master's, and I'm working towards a PhD. And I mean, if you knew anything about me when I was younger, leading this reckless lifestyle, not caring if I lived or died, for me to go from that to a PhD, like, is such a transformation. And that's what I wrote about. So the first book is not about an NDE. I mean, yeah, that's a catalyst, but it's about that transformation and that if I can do it, anybody can do it. I am not special. I am not chosen. I am not any different from anybody else. And if I can accomplish those things, you definitely can accomplish those things.
Oh my, a powerful story. And I can really feel your frustration in feeling you're going crazy. I cannot say I've had exactly the same feeling, but nuances of it when I had out-of-body experiences, not understanding what reality is. You then communicate with these spirits. What has that taught you about how the afterlife works? And what I get curious about is that these spirits that are talking to you, are they not fully... haven't they fully gone into the light? Are they sort of lingering somewhere in between? Is that sort of the souls you are communicating with that desperately need, you know, to get into contact with you, like that guy, that there's like a desperation there? So talk to me a little bit about who these souls are and how it works in the afterlife that you have learned.
I can tell you what how I perceive it.
Life is full of awesome what ifs and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out of pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com. Life is full of what ifs, some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? and some, well, less awesome. Like, what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
To the best of my ability, and I will preface that by stating I don't know everything factually, but the ones that I interact with, the way I believe it is when we first pass on, we go to the next realm of existence, which if we're going to call this the third, we'll call the next one the fourth, right? And then there's the fifth. And when you go into the fourth, I believe that means you're coming back. You become all-knowing. You see your review. You see everything you've done right and wrong. Karma will transcend. So if you were a bad person and you do come back, it's not going to be in a great set of circumstances. You're going to have bigger things to overcome. Okay. But like the Buddha taught us, when the Buddha passed and he knew he was dying, he told his disciples, "This is my seventh life and it will be my final life because I will not be going to that next realm. He'll be going to the one after that." When he explained it, it kind of clicked for me too. Because those that I speak to that look human or make themselves appear to me as human, they have a message to get across that involves guilt, remorse, regret. Tell this one I'm sorry. Tell this one I should have done this. Tell this one where the money is. Tell this one this. These are the types of messages, right? They're essential messages that they want to get across. And they usually come with that real strong sense of urgency that they want to get the message through. Because I don't do this like professionally where I just say, okay, anybody can come to me. So when it happens to me, it's because of something significant. It comes with a significant emotion. Now, that being that I saw, I am assuming is one of my guides, who resides in the fifth realm. And in the fifth realm, they're bodiless. They're not male or female. They're just energetic lines. When I communicate with my guides, that is what they have no humanness to them. And I know that my guides, if I'm seeing a deceased person, which I refer to as an energy being, okay, and if I'm also speaking to one of my guides and they're both on the movie screen, the guide knows who I'm speaking to, but who I'm speaking to can't see my guide. So that shows me they're at different realms. They're in different places, but I can see them both. So I'm talking to two different realms at the same time. And that is the best way I can kind of describe what I believe to be true. It's a combination of the Buddhist teachings and the things that I have seen that I kind of like piece together. And I don't practice mediumship professionally, and I doubt that I will, because I respect mediums so much because you take on the emotion of the deceased for a while. It doesn't leave you for a while. So when I did readings I still sometimes do them in class, but that's it. That's the only time I'll do them. You know, that resonates with me for a long time. Quantum entanglement is the energetic the two energies commingling together, right? So the deceased energy and my energy are becoming one for a little while so that I can communicate the message. And that stays with me for hours. So it could be several hours until I get back to being myself again. And I had a huge spiritual awakening when I was writing the second book. And that's really what the second book is about. And I lost my negative emotions. And that doesn't mean I don't experience them. It just simply means that I don't carry them. I don't carry them around with me. I can make them go away. They just kind of dissipate. And that is what I worked on for so many years, because I was a very angry person coming from that home. I was a very violent person coming from that home. And I needed to change that. I needed to stop that. And so I lost my anger. I worked on this year after year after year. And I read how to do it. And I read not just like the spiritual side. I studied Eckhart Tolle. I studied Deepak Chopra. I studied Jesus, everybody you could think of. And then on the other side, I studied all the great physicists. Einstein, Tesla, Niels Bohr, Hubble, you name it. I studied them. And then I started to see the correlation, because remember, I'm the biggest skeptic. I'm my biggest skeptic. I didn't believe anything for almost 50 years. So for me to accept it as being so, I needed to be able to start to put together the science with the spirituality. And as I began to do that, that's when I wrote the second book, and that's what that is. And so I guess where I was going with this is that I don't practice because I have had this awakening and I don't want to go. I just found happiness. First half of my life was so far from that. And I kind of want to stay here just for a little while.
I'm curious as to, in a way, how important this life is. Because in one sense, we could think that, oh, we live so many lives and there's no judgment and we can try again and again. And in another sense, it seems like to me that this life is very important. Like you're saying that these souls, they have remorse and guilt and they might be lingering somewhere. So what is your insight about this reality and this life we're living?
Well, like I said, the way I see it is that, like the Buddha said, we have to reach enlightenment in this life or any life in order to advance ourselves to that fifth realm where we are now somebody's guide. And it, until you can do that, and there is judgment in a way, because karma will come with you wherever you go. So if you cross over, you're going to be shown the things that you've done wrong. You're also going to be shown the things you've done right. And then when you return, it's going to be more difficult for you to get to enlightenment. So you're going to set yourself back. And the better we are in this life, then the next life will be easier and I will be able to get closer to enlightenment faster. And it's when we finally reach that level that we get to just bypass that next realm. That's what I think.
Are we receiving help at this time? Do you think that, you know, the shift of consciousness that we're in, that we're sort of receiving help from the collective as well, that we're awakening, that it's easier to achieve an enlightening soon?
Yeah, and it's always been like that, but you have to be open to it. You have to accept it as fact. You know, remember now my life, everybody told me I was crazy, but yeah. Imagine that didn't go that way. Imagine from birth, I took this on as reality. And I went into the collective and I received that information and I allowed that to be, and I allowed that to be a part of my life. I could be a completely different person and I could have been helping people. God knows what I might be able to do today to help people, right? But because I rejected, which is what most people do. And it's nobody's fault. We're not taught this. We're simply not taught this. And I haven't, you know, nothing against religion, but none of the religions really teach us this. They teach us maybe a little part of it, and then the rest is all about other things, an agenda usually that has nothing to do with our spirituality and moving on.
What would you say to those who are curious and they want to open up to spirituality, but they have no proof? Like I've spoken to a few people who are like, I want to believe you, Janneke. It's interesting what you're doing on your YouTube channel. But to me, I just believe that there is just birth to death and nothing more. Like, that's what I know. And it's sort of like they are curious. They want to believe, but they don't have a reason to.
So the first, I mean, if they're, say, an atheist, non-believer, complete non-believer, the first place that I would start with them, and I do coaching and I help people reach spiritual awakenings and hopefully one day enlightenment. I'm not enlightened, by the way. Let me say that. I'm a work in progress, okay? I don't want to speak like I am more than I am. I'm not. I'm just a person. I would begin by teaching some of the things that I learned in transforming myself to answering or accepting the knowledge from the collective. And what prevents us from doing that is our egoic minds. We have an egoic mind, right? We have the subconscious and the unconscious. And what does the subconscious know? It knows yesterday. It knows the past. It can't know tomorrow because it's a data bank. It's a storage bank of everything that you've seen and you've heard and whatever since the day you were born. And it mixes up television with reality and everything else. And it just compiles it all in there on a hard drive. And the egoic mind has to go to that to get its information telling you what to do next. So guess what? You're always living in the past. You're always going to be the same person you were yesterday. So how can you break that cycle? Well, you go to your conscious mind, which is able to go to the collective and get information. Why don't we do that? Because the subconscious acts first. It's there to protect you, right? So it's like when we were primitive and you saw, a predator that was going to eat you, an animal that was going to come out, your subconscious kicked in and said, run, let's go. You know, even today, if we see a scary movie, think about this. You see a scary movie, you know, you're in a movie theater and the guy jumps out with the axe and you go, why would you do that? There's nothing to be scared of. You're in a movie theater with your friends, right? But we do that because that's our subconscious, and Hollywood knows that our subconscious reacts first. Then our conscious mind catches up and says, you're in a movie theater, dude, just relax. You're with your friends. No one's trying to kill you. And then we calm back down. And it's living off the reactive egoic mind that you break first. You start to chip away and chip away and chip away. And then I show them how to get information from the collective. And when you start to feel that, and this works through meditation, and people say they can't meditate. Yes, you can. You can have thoughts and everybody can meditate. So you start to receive that information. And when you start to get hits, like you start to do a couple of these things, you're like, wow, I think I'm onto something. And then you practice it more and you practice it more. And, you know, you can start with the law of attraction and the law of vibration, because it's very simple, and start to acquire things. And then you can start to look at your reality, your current reality, as in a different way, in a different perspective. Like, I am in control of this life. Now, if I'm in control of this life and I'm getting information from up there, this can't be all fake. And that's where you kind of start and allow the person to grow and then see what they receive. And from there, I've had people come to me and say, you know, I saw this whole thing play out, and then it played out exactly the way I saw it. It's like, yeah, now you're getting it. Everybody's psychic. Everybody is intuitive. We just don't all develop it because we reject it out of fear, because that's the unknown. But our consciousness is our sixth sense. Okay. You don't have to call it psychic. I try not to use any terms other than scientific terms, because so people will accept it. Your consciousness, that's your soul. When you die, your consciousness, that energy, leaves your body. And we know that because the first law of thermodynamics tells us so. All energy cannot cease to exist in the universe. New energy cannot enter this universe. It has to be recycled. So the first law of thermodynamics states that when your human energy leaves your body, it must go somewhere. That's already scientifically proven. So you can't die. You've got to go somewhere.
Yes, I believe so too. You speak about four principles of ascension. What is ascension to you? Is that what we spoke about, enlightenment? So it's sort of a goal. And then I get curious about these four principles.
So I wrote the four principles of ascension because they are the primary things that will allow us to grow to a higher level of consciousness. And the first one is that you will die. So accepting the fact that you will die, but that it's not the end, and changing your relationship with death in that manner will free you. Okay, because in a lot of ways, we don't take certain chances. We don't do certain things. As long as you live that good life, you are coming back. If you live a bad life, you're coming back. It's just, you're not going to like it, you know? But either way, understand and accept the fact that this will come to an end. So that in and of itself will make you do things, or hopefully inspire you to do things that you may not do otherwise. Take a chance. Be who you want to be. Don't be the person that you were told you had to be. Don't find happiness in what your parents told you happiness is if you don't agree with that. If your version of happiness is different, do it. Just do it. So change that relationship with death. It's not final, okay? And the second one is set yourself free. Adds on to the first, right? So you set yourself free by getting rid of the ego and stop living by what the ego dictates for you to do or be or act, and start living from a place of awareness. That's your highest level of consciousness, is your awareness. And it's because we're aware that we're having a thought or an emotion. And if you're aware that you're having a thought or an emotion, guess what? You can change them. So it doesn't have to be the way the ego dictates it. If somebody cuts you off, you don't have to get angry. That's your choice. But we don't think it's a choice. We just think that, what do you mean? He nearly killed me. I have to get angry. No, you don't. No, you don't. My wife drives me crazy. I've got to go get a drink. No, you don't. Nobody makes you anything. So free yourself and find yourself. When I tell people that they are not their ego, and that chitter chatter in your brain is not you, they're so relieved. And when I tell them that the real you is up there, all you have to do is find the real you and pull it towards you, because your higher self is connected to the collective. That is you. That's the real you. But you're not letting the real you come through because you're bombarded with the yesterday, with the ego. So number two is to set yourself free. Number three adds on to number two. Good and bad is a choice. Okay. People will say, well, what were the best moments of your life, right? My answer would be my traumas, my worst days on this earth, because that's when I learned something. That's when I showed my character. That's when I showed who I was. That's when I learned the most about reality. I didn't learn the most about reality when something was given to me. I learned the most about reality when I was beaten within an inch of my life. That's when I learned. I took more away from that than I ever would take away from having a great day. So it's the traumas, the tragedies that we take away the most from, and we learn the most. Decide what's good and bad in your life. You could say, oh, I got COVID and it was terrible. And I was in my house and we had a lockdown. Maybe you didn't get COVID. Maybe you're just in lockdown. Or you can say, during the lockdown, I took a class on this and I got certified in this. Or I became closer to my family. Or, you know, so there's always silver linings, but you have to look at it that way. You have to see it that way. Because if you only see the negative, you're going to be miserable. Because the negative is going to be there. So is the positive. Which one you look at is going to be up to you. So take the good things and start to see the good things. Even in the tragedies, even in the traumas, try to find those good things. And the last one, four, the biggest one. You are God. God is not a separate entity that judges you. God is the universal collective, right? You're a part of that collective. I'm a part of it. Everybody watching this is a part of the collective. We all make up the entity that is God. So you can create, you can make your life. This is why the law of attraction works. One of the reasons you can create your life, you can attract it to you. You don't have to go out and fight and fight and fight. You can make things come to you. And you have the power to change others' lives in a good way. Yes, you could do it in a bad way, but don't do it in a bad way. Because like I just said, karma transcends. So as a part of this reality, we are all a part of this collective. And as such, we can all come together and reach a tipping point where we go towards good as a society, or we can all start to go towards bad. And that choice is within each and every one of us, because we all make up that entity. We are all a part of God. Jesus told us, you're a part of God. God is a part of you. And a version of that is in every religion. So if they all know that, then you must be a part of God. And as such, you have to start acting like one.
This was very inspiring, I gotta say. I feel like my vibration is just raising and raising. That was beautiful, really profound.
Thank you.
Yeah, and you're so right. It resonates so much that we have the choice. Like often in my life, I've been thinking that, oh, there's a destiny there. So am I supposed to go this path or that path? And this must be the wrong path and that must be the right, or is that the right or that the wrong? Or, and then also like when it comes to relationships, will this last? Is this my soulmate? And then I've noticed that I have the choice. We have the choice together. The future is not set in stone, even though there's a future life there, even though the future is happening right now, which is mind-boggling. And I don't understand how they fit together, that there is a destiny, and at the same time, I have my free will and I have the choice. But from a higher perspective, I think I will understand it. But from my perspective, I cannot understand it.
Well, it's definitely not an overnight grasp, but it's something that, you know, like you said, what if I choose this? What if I choose that? Well, what if I told you they're both right? Because whatever the outcome is, you're going to have the good experience as long as you choose it. Because even if the experience is bad, you can take away the good and say, well, yeah, this was terrible, but I learned so much from it. I'm not going to do this again. And I'm going to teach this to my kids so they don't repeat what I did. There's always that positivity there. And then you go back and you do the other one. You're not limited. You're limitless.
And I think it's so important, one of the principles, the good and bad, that you actually don't linger in the negative emotions. And it's not the same as, oh, I got to think positively all the time, because I had a lot of resistance towards that a time in my process. But then I realized that I also need not to feed the negativity. There's one thing to feel the feeling, but I cannot continue feeling the feeling and then becoming more and more heavy and depressed. And then I just stay there.
Perfect. That's exactly right. We're still going to experience the negative emotion, but let it go.
Right.
Let it go. Don't let it control you. Let's say that driver cuts you off and you get angry. Mm-hmm. Get angry. Okay. Experience the anger. Don't be the anger. Experience it and then let it go. Otherwise you hold on to it, right? And then you drive to work and you say, you're never going to believe what this guy did to me. And you're telling it. And then you go home and you say, you're never going to believe this guy that cut me off today. And then you're going to tell somebody else. And you're just brewing and brewing, and you're just going to bring more of that to you because you're staying in it too long. Let it go. let it go. Some things take longer than others, right? So, tragedies, serious tragedies, a loss of a loved one, that's going to take a while to dissipate, okay? It's not the same as getting cut off. But there are a lot of little things that we can let go very quickly of.
Right. What is the biggest insight you have gotten through these mystical experiences?
That we are God, that we control ourselves and we control the future and collectively as such. And that we really have to acknowledge that when we hurt another person, we're hurting ourselves because we're one. We're all one. It's that oneness at the end of the day. We have to remember harming your fellow man is harming yourself.
What is the deeper meaning of life from your perspective?
Ooh, deeper meaning. I'm not sure I know that. I'm really not. I think that the immediate goal is enlightenment, but where that goes after that, I don't know. I really don't.
I love that.
Good. Sometimes I'm going to say, I don't know. I'm not going to make something up for you. I don't know.
That is honest. Who knows, right?
When I get there, I promise to tell you if that ever happens. Yes, please. And if you get there first, you tell me, okay?
Yes, because then I can probably come through you because you have the ability.
There you go. There you go.
All right, but I don't hope it's my time yet because I'm really having a blast right now. I love what I'm doing and having conversations like this. Now, Ray, this has been a wonderful experience having you on the show. So much wisdom I felt came through today and really empowering wisdom. Where can people find you? Could you share a little bit about your work today if people want to connect with you?
Sure. RayKatanya.com is my website. And I do personal one-on-one coaching. Sometimes I do online classes and you can sign up, just drop your email in there and you'll get an email whenever I do a class. And if you wish to pursue the coaching route, you can just fill out the contact form. Both books are on the website and they are The Atheist in the Afterlife. And the second one is You're Still Alive, Now Act Like It. And they're available Barnes & Noble, Amazon, anywhere, any bookstore in the world. Thank you for allowing me to say that. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Ray, for coming to the show today.
Thank you.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
If you want to become more who you are and live in alignment with your soul's purpose and explore a deeper meaning with your life, then you are most welcome to join Wisdom from North membership. If you want to go deeper, you can find all our English online courses and programs at wisdomfromnorth.com. You can also find us on Instagram and Facebook and YouTube just by searching for Wisdom from North. Until the next episode, much light from here.